Hi, this is Katie Day, and you're listening to Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women across the globe. Sometimes it is the small acts and achievements that can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh. Sometimes they may make you cry. They are guaranteed to always inspire you. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing Jo Murray. It is fair to say that both Jo's personal and professional career paths have been unusual. She has worked on a ranch in Colorado, been a PA, run a construction site control room from a porter cabin on the M4, I so need to find out more about that one, worked for Sol Kerzner, set up as a freelance editor, proofreader, writer to fund university as a mature student, been a landlady of her own pub, and worked in creative communications and business development. Now in her 50th year, a mother of three, Jo is proud to have opened Cappuccini, a station platform cafe, with more openings scheduled for the future. She is also a finalist in this year's Sussex Business Women Excellence Awards for the best startup business. Jo lived in Colorado for many years and in Okinawa in Japan. She has lived in a chocolate box English cottage, built and lived on a houseboat on the River Thames in the UK, in Henley, and experienced swaying apartment blocks in Typhoon Alley in Japan. She believes the road less travelled is her personal mission statement, and she believes that if you want to do anything, you absolutely have to try with courage and conviction. Because life really is all about the journey, as the end result is the same for all of us. Oh boy, isn't it? We come in alone, we go out alone.
We do.
What defines us is what we do in the bit in the middle.
Exactly.
And I love that book, The Road Less Travelled.
So do I.
It's a brilliant book.
It is.
Somebody, in fact, an aunt gave me that when I was in my early 30s, and I'd come out of divorce number two. It was an interesting year, my 20s. And she gave me that book. Yeah, it's a brilliant, brilliant. And it's been around for decades, hasn't it?
But, yeah. You know, the philosophy behind it is relevant now, 10 years, 20 years, time, whenever.
Absolutely. Timeless. It is a timeless book. And so another one is Susan Jeffers, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. That's a timeless book as well.
Yeah, read it.
Have you not?
Yeah, no.
Brilliant. So, I'm not sure where to start, really. Well, well done for the awards. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm very,
that's
very,
very
proud
exciting.
About that. That is
exciting. You must be.
Yes.
You must be. And it's in late November, isn't it?
Yes, in Brighton.
Yeah,
there's a big dinner in Brighton. But yeah, the Let's Do Business group actually nominated me for that, which was a complete surprise.
Fantastic.
So, I was very, very proud of that, really.
Yeah. No, you should be. That's great. Mm. Yeah, well, good luck for that.
Yeah.
We can interview you again afterwards when you've won.
Here's hoping.
Do you know how many people are finalists in your category?
There's 14 out of 310.
Okay. So 310 finalists.
Were put through, and there was a semi-final
with
110 people went to that. And the final is up through 14 companies.
14 in all categories?
No, in the startup.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow.
So I think I did quite well to get to the final.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So I'll be happy.
Absolutely.
With that.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, as far as you know what the competition is?
Brighton Gin is one of them.
Oh, really?
Worryingly, I'm not sure I can compete.
Coffee Gin.
Know your limits. That's the one that really stuck out in my mind, actually. But I've looked them up, and, you know, they're two women, and good luck. You know, they look good. Mm.
So, wow, exciting. Yeah. So, what came first, Okinawa or Colorado?
Colorado.
Colorado. So tell us about Colorado then. What were you doing there?
I went to Colorado for my 30th birthday.
Right.
I always had a passion for the Wild West, and I went to work on a ranch to get it out of my system.
Okay.
Celebrate my 50th, up a mountain, talking to a wrangler, moaning on about being 30. And that didn't get it out of my system. And because I was 30, I think I was in my second year at university, it just made it worse for me. So I managed to apply for a job on a ranch as a mature student. I could get an agricultural visa into America.
Oh, interesting.
Was a little, perhaps, a bend of the rules. But if you were a student, you could apply. And I applied and I got it. And then I applied for a job on a very swanky American ranch high up in the Zirka Wilderness, where very rich American people went on holiday. So it wasn't quite city slickers. However, that said, I was a ranch hand and I used to take the rides out across the Rockies. People used to come there. You know, I obviously horses were my thing. And I did cattle drives through the Rockies. I did everything. And I chopped wood at the end of the season for $1.60 an hour. You know, just what you do. So you did, it was hands-on. Everybody mucked in. I think I must have been 31 then. I found that more difficult than anything else because I had to share a dormitory, obviously, with all the other ranch hands, which were effectively young American college students.
Okay.
And I'd already had my own house and used to my own company. And
wow.
There I had no car, 40 minutes to the nearest store.
Okay.
But, it, you know, wilderness was beautiful.
So you had experience with horses over here in the UK before you went to Colorado?
I had my own horses. I used to work in racing. I worked for Jobmont Farms, which was Prince Khalid Abdullah's operation. But I'm not a racehorse rider, obviously. But I always had a bit of a thing. So I was just a self-taught rider, really.
Right.
And I've never done any Western riding.
Yeah. But very different, I should think.
Very different, very different, very comfortable, and you've just got to give it a go, haven't you?
So how long were you there?
I was there for about 6 months. I was there, and actually I met he's now my ex-husband, I did meet my husband there, and I had a really, really good time, but it wasn't real, was it? I went there having done law and Japanese as my degree, having turned down a serious job offer to do with soya milk on the legal side, in Edinburgh, commuting from Edinburgh to Canada. And I had that job offer, which going back then, company car, lots of money, and a job where you just got paid according to the time of the season. So everyone thought I was mad, but I took the life experience against the corporate animal. And I've got no regrets doing that, actually.
Really?
Because I think I would have found the constraints of being a corporate animal just a little bit too much. And when I studied law as a mature student, I used to work for a barrister, but he was a management consultant. And he took me out for dinner one day and he said, Joe, he said, there's no real room for a revolutionary in law. And I have to say at the time, I felt that was a little harsh and I didn't really understand what he meant until I'd done my degree. And then I realised exactly what he meant. So the law is not really about people as such. It's not about helping people. It's actually about a set of rules, snakes and ladders. If you play the rules right, you win.
Yeah.
Not about justice or right and wrong.
Sadly, it's true, isn't it?
Yeah, it is true.
Very, very rule-driven. And
that might be a harsh assessment. However,
yeah,
you know, that is that combined with there's no room for a revolutionary is really why he was right.
So you have to be creative within very strong constraints, don't you? Particularly as a barrister.
You do.
And I think barrister, my very small knowledge of the law, but barristers to me, a good barrister is the one who can perform best.
Exactly.
Because it is a performance.
It is a complete performance.
And it's how good you are with words, how good you are at persuasion, how good you are at building rapport, how good you are at convincing a jury that you are right and your colleague on the other side is wrong. And it isn't actually anything to do with whether that person is guilty or innocent.
And I would struggle with that. And I would never be able to defend a rapist or anybody like that who I actually believed in my heart was guilty. I wouldn't actually, as a person, be able to shelve that and do the best that I could for my clients.
It's fascinating. When you think people who go into law are very rule-driven, that must be a huge, at times, potentially, a conflict of interest inside their own head.
Depends what
part of law you go into, of course. Not all of it is criminal law.
No, not all of it's exciting. But that is the truth. Yeah. That is the truth. But, you know, I'm glad I did my degree. Perhaps, and it stood me in good stead. And I always had a big chip on my shoulder about not having gone to university when I should have gone 18,
right.
19.
Right.
So I thought, well, we'll just get the chip off the shoulder and go and do it now then.
Good for you.
I mean, I didn't go in all fairness. My father was ill and he died of leukemia, which is actually why I didn't go.
Right.
But you can't just have a hook and just pin everything on that and say, well, it's because of X, Y and Z. You have to go and do it yourself. And I probably did it the harder way. I had a mortgage. I was used to earning money. You know, it wasn't easy.
What were you doing before you went back? to study?
Before I went back to study, I'd been at various jobs, obviously, but sort of PA, I'd done sort of office management, and, you know, the irony of my life today is you have to understand, perhaps going back then, we're talking like late 80s, early 90s, work for women was still perhaps quite tricky, and that if you had a brain, that wasn't necessarily always welcome. And the number of times I was asked to go and make the coffee, and now I find myself making the coffee, delighted to be making the coffee because I've chosen to make the coffee. And it, you know, actually my, what I do today, it's not even really about the coffee. It's just about making sure for the time people are inside my coffee shop, they have a nice chat or a nice time or whatever. But yeah, I find that that does amuse me immensely today. So I was just, I was a PA. I did lots of really mundane photocopying, and then I worked at Jobmont Farms, and that was fascinating.
So what's that?
That's Prince Khalid's bloodstock operation in the UK.
Right.
So all his broodmares and stallions standing at stud. And I used to do the stallion syndicate, so managing owners, you know, different breed in themselves. Fantastic life. Just outside Henley-on-Thames, I had a cottage with my job. It was all lovely.
Oh, really?
Oh, brilliant.
Was that the chocolate box English cottage?
No, that was the one that I bought after the houseboat. And then that my job role moved to Newmarket, which if I was a racing girl, that would have been the ultimate dream. But I wasn't a racing girl, really. That wasn't my thing. And perhaps that's why I got the job at Jobmont, because the guy I worked for, he was also a top London lawyer, as well as managing the operation. But I didn't really know anything about racing, which stood in my favour, because it's a very clicky inside sort of industry.
Is it?
Yeah. And I didn't know anything about that either.
Okay.
I didn't know anything about lots of things that I've done, but you sort of find out, don't you?
You do.
Yeah. So, so that's when I worked at Jobmont, and then Mark Brown, the management consultant, was the last person. I was effectively his office manager. And, you know, I just thought, I've perhaps come as far as I can go. I don't always want to do this. And I had lots of different jobs, which is normally a sign of somebody who's just not settled, you're not happy. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go to university. And I'm delighted I did, because it opened other doors, other avenues, and, you know, off I went on yet another path, really.
So you did law and...
with Japanese.
Why Japanese?
Well, funny enough, I wanted to do French because I already speak French. I thought, that'll be easy. And I met a fascinating woman whose husband was... they've got their own shipping company. Huge shipping company. So millionaire, that's lovely. Tiny little of Chinese origin woman. And we were an unlikely couple because I still had my chip on my shoulder and she had no chips on her shoulder. And she was about 2 foot tall and dripping in diamonds and drove a Porsche into university. You wonder why nobody liked her. But we struck up a friendship, and it was thanks to Louise, actually. And she said to me, why are you doing French? You need to do Japanese. It's an unusual language. And the facility was there to do it. So she made me do it.
Wow.
And we were going to do it together, and then she would fly to Hong Kong every weekend, and I'd have to tape all the lectures and teach her when she got back. Madness, really. And she, sadly, she dropped out at the end of the first year. But yeah, so I did Japanese, and that's thanks to her, actually. Because she's, you know, I was really there to test my academic boundaries, not just sit in the comfort zone.
Gosh.
So, yeah.
An interesting language to learn.
Very interesting. What I like about Japanese, I'm rubbish at art, so I did actually find the writing... I've probably caused much offence, because one wrong flick on a kanji can just make it...
A completely different word.
But they are not, you know, they're very, very... they don't use unnecessary words. They're very concise. Mm. So we would put a lovely sentence, please could I have some water? They just say, water, please. They don't, it's not a frivolous language.
Okay.
So actually to learn to speak it is probably easier than people think.
Right.
To learn to write it.
Oh boy.
Yes, it's very, very different. I don't think it's as hard as Russian or as hard as Chinese, but.
Oh, I don't know. I've learned Russian.
Have you?
And
is it hard?
Well, I thought it was until I tried it. I mean, the first lesson, there was only two of us, and we had lovely Olga from Moscow University. Right. And on lesson one, she said, this is the only lesson I speak to you in English.
Okay, Olga.
Right then. And she was serious. Lesson number two, it was all Russian. I was like rabbit in headlights.
Did you learn it?
I did learn it. It's kind of, yes.
It is the best way.
It's the best way.
It's cool.
And I had a week to learn the Cyrillic alphabet. And actually, it was a lot easier than I thought it was. Once you've learnt the alphabet, which is why, I mean, it is proper. I mean, it's different, obviously, to our alphabet. Mm. But it's not, I mean,
it's not a picture.
Japanese is like hieroglyphics.
It's a picture.
Yeah, it's a picture. But at least they are actually letters. Mm. I mean, some of them, you know, the wrong way round to what we're used to.
So it was sort of in the remit of press.
But it was kind of in the remit. Yeah. So it's a lot. The Cyrillic alphabet, for me, looking at the Cyrillic alphabet and Japanese, the Cyrillic alphabet looks a hell of a lot easier.
Oh, perhaps I should have done Russian. I don't forgive you, Louise. No, I don't.
And it's what surprised me about Russian is how similar it is to French.
Really?
And German.
I certainly don't forgive her now.
Because some of the words are identical in French and Russian. And I asked my boss, who was Bulgarian and was fluent in Russian, and he said because the Russian aristocracy had to speak French. So there's a lot of French words in the Russian language. And it's completely phonetic as well, the Russian language. So it's actually easier than I thought it was when I first learned it. I can't remember any of it now.
Sure you could.
Maybe I could.
You just throw in Russia and see if that's the impediment of French words.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
But yeah, I love listening to Japanese, actually. I think it's fascinating.
It's fascinating.
Language. And it's a shame I didn't interview you earlier because you would have been really interested in an event last week at the House of Lords with five hibushka.
I would have been.
From Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
I would have been fascinated.
Never mind. Never mind.
Wasn't meant for me.
It wasn't meant. No. Another time. If they're back next year and we do another one, I'll let you know.
Yeah, let me know. Good.
So you lived in Okinawa?
I did. I lived in Okinawa. I moved there from Colorado. I got married and had children.
Right.
And we moved...
To an American.
To an American. Mm-hmm. But we did come over to England. We got married here and took a Breakspears pub, which was a bit of a disaster because I was still quite fresh from my law degree. And the pub was packed on the opening night and I rang the bell calling time at the appropriate time and the whole pub went silent. And that's when I realised that it'd been a late night drinking pub and the natives were very unfriendly. And then we had a war with the village, which we didn't win. Or we just couldn't
What was the war about?
Well, I called time and I wouldn't let them drink. And then they kicked off and then they smashed the windows. And food-wise, we were doing very well. My ex-husband was an executive chef, a very good executive chef in America. And we were doing Mexican food when Mexican food hadn't arrived.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, I don't know, we must have had about 60, 70 people one night eating a hopper state at night, and they smashed all the windows. It was horrible, actually. And that was just outside Pangbourne in leafy Berkshire, where you wouldn't expect.
Grief.
You would never have expected. We had the riot police, the dogs.
Good grief.
And I just thought, we don't need this. No. I don't need this. So I'd worked in bars, in pubs in Henley to put myself through my degree, and I really liked it. It was fun. But that wasn't fun at all.
God.
So we moved back to America. And
what part? Back to Colorado?
Back to Colorado, yeah. I love Colorado.
What part of Colorado?
Actually, we moved near Boulder. And looking up at the Rockies, which I actually preferred Steamboat, because I actually love the Rockies. I absolutely love them. So we were there, and then he got offered a job in Okinawa, for the military, but not in service, although he was ex-American military. So we ended up in Okinawa, which has got all the American armed forces, all of them, the Marines, the Air Force, the Navy and the Army. They've all got bases there. But we lived in a really nice apartment on the seafront.
And you could use your Japanese?
That's what I thought. I was very smug in my first 3 days.
Okay, what happened?
I thought I'd ordered pork balls for a Chinese takeaway, all sort of beautifully done, and I was sitting looking out at the lovely sea view, and I thought, what is that in my mouth? And it was actually the sucker pad of an octopus.
Okay.
Which, you know, didn't thrill me, and, you know, my Japanese had already got rather rusty, I can assure you. But
fascinating time, Okinawa, amazing country. First time I think I really experienced racism. And
interesting.
Very, very interesting. The Okinawan people, they don't want to be Japanese. They don't want to be Chinese or Taiwanese. They are themselves, and they've always been occupied. Obviously, strong problem there with the end of World War II. And Americans not really particularly welcome. And I can see why. The American forces have got beautiful bases, their own beaches, etc., etc. And the Okinawan people, the true Okinawan people, have got nothing. So I had a 4-bedroom apartment. By American standards, it was small. By Okinawan standards, they could have fitted 4 or 5 families in there.
Wow.
I've had the bus wouldn't stop for me to let me in with my children. Forget it, not happening. And I couldn't get my hair cut. They just pointed to a sign, Japanese only. Fascinating. So not nasty, horrible racism, but just, you know, you're not actually one of us and you're not coming in. Which, you know, I understand that. I didn't, you know, I was sad about that, obviously. But, you know, but the Okinawan people that would talk, lovely, lovely. And they're the healthiest people on the planet.
They are, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's been lots of studies, haven't they, of what is it about the Okinawan people.
And they are very peaceful people.
And their longevity.
Mm, huge.
Incredible.
Their diet. They just eat the seaweed. We go to the Chinese takeaway and have it fried and put sugar on. And they eat it straight off the sea wall. As it comes in.
Do they? Gosh.
Yeah. So, fascinating.
Mm. Were you able to travel throughout Japan while you were there?
No, the children were tiny. They were, right. I think, they were 2, 3 and 4 at the time. So, no, travelling, it was enough to get there.
2, 3 and 4, heavens to Betsy. That's a busy few years, isn't it?
3 under 3. Yeah. Well, if you're having children, you might as well just have them.
Just have them.
I just had them. And then they're all running together in pack formation, with the theory being they'll leave home all at the same time.
Did that work?
Of course. Well, I don't know. No, they're still 14, 16 and 17 at the moment.
So, yeah.
But I fear my plan may not work. I'm already getting signs that that's not going to
happen. They're there for the duration.
I think they might be. Yes. But, fascinating, different culture, fascinating. And that's Typhoon Alley, Okinawa. I didn't realise
is it?
It is. So the typhoons used to travel up between Okinawa and Korea.
Right.
So there was a super typhoon hit Korea. I think 130 mile an hour winds that threw the roads about. And I thought, is this a good place to be with 3 small children, maybe? Mm. But it was fine.
How long were you there?
Oh, a good year, just over a year. Yeah.
And then was it back to Colorado?
Well, then we went back to the UK.
Okay.
Yeah, we went back to the UK, and then that is when we were no more.
Oh, okay.
But that's fine, because, you know, not all Americans are in love with England.
Fair enough.
And actually, the children were just about to start school, and I was very adamant, really, that the children should go to school in England.
Okay.
Not overly fond of the American education system.
Right.
So that's what happened. Well, that's life, and you just move on.
Okay, so is he back in the States?
Yeah, he's been back in the States a long time. Yeah. So, I think a long time. So, yeah, just get on with it, and life goes a different way.
So what did you do then?
Then I moved down to the Isle of Wight.
Ah, lovely.
My mother happened to live there, and I just thought, okay, here we are. What should we do now? And I haven't worked. I mean, I did take, to bring up my children, I did take the best part of 10 years out of working life, which I have no regrets about, because if I see one of my children now, I know exactly the way they walk, I know what's coming. And I think perhaps I wouldn't have had that luxury if I hadn't been there. And I'm adopted, and I actually wanted to make sure that I was there for my own children.
Okay.
So I have been, so I can tick that box and don't need to feel the guilt. Done that. So now back at work with a vengeance.
Okay.
If you know what I mean.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. So how long were you in the Isle of Wight?
Down in the Isle of Wight probably for about a year. And then obviously I met someone and that brought me up to Sussex. And here I am now in Sussex.
Are you still with them?
No.
Oh, okay.
But...
Silly question, Katie.
They have to keep up, Katie, and they can't keep up. Please keep up. And that's the problem.
Stick with the programme. What's wrong with you?
But, you know, it's the same problem. If you're with someone who tries to put you in a straitjacket and doesn't let you...
Clip your wings.
Yes. Then if you are like me, and perhaps like you, you are going to fly whatever they do. So, it's good. So I wouldn't be doing this. you know.
It's very true.
It is.
It's very
and
true.
I'm confident, or not, I'll either end up knitting with a black cat in a rocking chair, or I will meet somebody who doesn't feel threatened, perhaps. That's perhaps the best word
for
it.
How old are you?
50.
Okay. Well, it took me to 55 before I met the person who wasn't going to clip my wings and actually encouraged me to fly and spread them wider. But it took me to 55.
There's hope.
With
then.
A lot of interesting experiences in the interim.
Excellent.
So, yeah, I'm with you every way.
Because that's
don't
what makes
clip
us
my wings.
No. And that is a real problem, I think. So, until such time, 55, 65, whenever, I'll stay as I am.
Good for you.
Really?
Good for you.
And, you know, Cappuccini's my new baby and really, really working hard on that.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I loved the link you sent me to kind of the website and the blog and everything else. And you've got plans to go on London Bridge Station.
Oh, no, we're going
to 2017.
To Barnham. I am moving around. I'm trying, I'm moving sort of up the lines.
Okay.
That's what I'm trying to do. I've got a Barnham in West Sussex is opening probably November.
Right.
I will open that. Yeah, and I'm looking at others. So.
Okay.
I just sort of like it. And I like the blog. And I've called it Off the Rails because...
It's a brilliant title.
It amuses me.
Brilliant title.
But that is what happens. So yeah. People are not... My customer base are travelling on the train. And the... worst judgment you can make is just everybody that comes in, they're all fascinating people with a story to tell, or
absolutely.
They're going through something, or there's always a reason why they're on the train. And it probably is work, but surrounding that just work is so many other little bits and pieces.
Yeah.
So I thought it'd be fun not to offend anyone or to gossip about anybody, but nothing said in, obviously, in my coffee shop is confidential because of the nature of where it is. But they're just like little gems and little glimpses of life that perhaps, you know, if anybody reads it, you think, oh, I wasn't perhaps expecting that. And the conversations I've had with people, never judge people by the way that they look. And it'd be in my blog next week, but I had a guy come back. It was 2 days ago. He walked in at 4:15 and he said, I owe you some money. And he'd come in 3 weeks before and he wanted a hot chocolate. I couldn't get the card machine to cooperate. He needed his train and he wasn't very chatty. And I said, please have it. And if you're passing through again, please come back. Came back and paid.
Wow.
So there's a lesson for us all there.
Wow.
That not everybody is on the take. And, you know, he didn't have to do that.
No.
And then actually I had an amazing conversation with him. He stayed for ages. And he's actually a saxophone player and a
wow.
composer.
Wow.
And he'd been travelling in Geneva and all over the place on tour. And he'd come back, his wife and children are in St. Leonard. So he was coming home. Fascinating guy. So yeah, so and I thought the blog, if it's just an opportunity,
really good idea.
Just not to be missed, really.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great idea. Great idea.
Still learning about blogging because obviously what is that? But you know, working on that. So I'm pleased.
And most of us are off the rails on some degree or another, aren't we?
Every one of us. If we're honest, if we would just put our hands up.
Given the opportunity,
yes.
We would be seriously off the rails
in
a blink of an eye.
We would be. Yes, we would. Yes, we are.
On the wrong side of the tracks.
And we should be.
Yeah. Life is for living.
It is.
No, it's
absolutely.
Brilliant. And this is what I love about doing these interviews is that, you know, as I say to people, when you're walking down the street and you're walking past people all the time and you have absolutely no idea who you're walking past. You have
no
idea who you're sitting next to on the train, who you're standing next to on the underground
no.
and what their backstory is. And I actually
no.
mentioned you.
Oh.
And I said, you know, this Roger and I were, we ran to the platform just to see that the train had been cancelled. And then I suddenly spotted the car. I said, oh, I haven't seen that before. It's a coffee shop. Let's go and get a cup of coffee. Walked in, got chatting to this amazing woman who started and found out that she'd lived in Colorado. I went, what? Oh, my God, I so need to interview you. I said, you have
no idea
who you're surrounded by. And everybody has the most amazing story.
They do. And
people are fascinating, aren't they?
People are fascinating. And that sort of links back to my earlier point. It's not really about the coffee. It is, because good coffee matters and I won't accept bad coffee. But it is about sometimes that 30-second chat or that 3-minute chat, it is all about people.
Mm.
It's all, cappuccini is all about people.
Mm. It's fantastic.
So in a way, I've probably found, finally, where I should be.
Mm.
Because I think I'm quite good with people. I hope I'm quite good. You know, customer service is important. But, you know, giving people just a bit of time.
Mm.
No sulky faces allowed.
Mm.
You know, nothing worse than being served a coffee by someone really, really grumpy. And then there are those who really don't want to chat, and that's absolutely fine.
Just want to come and have their coffee, get on the train.
Just go. So I don't care who you
be
are.
Be in their own space.
You which stand is behind that counter smiling. I'm not interested. And that's fine too. Because same judgment rules apply. I don't know what's going on with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And absolutely. Some people are quiet for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah,
and I should have been a therapist.
Well, you are.
I am.
You're just a different version of it.
A free one.
Yeah. That's long said, but I can't
think. No. £2.20. It's amazing what you get. Bargain of the year, Katie.
Yeah, and you get a shot of caffeine at the same time. It's a perfect combination.
It is.
Yes, it is. So how are you going to choose the people? Because obviously, if you're in St Leonard's, you can't be anywhere else. How are you going to choose the people who are going to run these different outlets for you?
And this is not meant to sound remotely arrogant, but I sort of think they'll come and find me.
And, okay, interesting.
And they sort of have already. I have one guy who works for me now, and he came and asked me for a job somewhere where I had before. Two people came in and asked me for work, and I employ both of them. Because I do think if you're actively out looking for work, that's a good starting point. And, you know, let's be honest, the food service industry in whichever format is known for having quite a transient crew. But I just think people will come and they will find me. I hope they find me, Katie. Otherwise, I could be very, very busy on many, many trains.
Just cloning yourself so you can be in each one.
But I think all of us throughout our life have been somewhere, perhaps when we've been looking for work, and there's certain places where you would never want to go and never want to work. And I think perhaps it's a bit of a compliment if somebody walks into my coffee shop and then asks me for a job. Already they're feeling comfortable that that is somewhere that they would like to work. And that's the way I would like it to be. And we try and have a bit of a laugh, you know, and we don't need, you know, that horrible 80s shouty management style is not actually how you get the best out of people.
God, no.
You know, I trust my staff. And, you know, I had a conversation with the police following an incident about CCTV. And I said, I don't have it, because if I have to have a camera pointing at my till, it actually means I don't trust my staff. And if I don't trust my staff, I shouldn't employ them. So, you know, when
it's a tricky one, isn't
it? It is, because when I'm poor because everybody robbed me, I'll be able to put my hand up and say I was wrong. But until that time, I set out perhaps with, let's look for the good in people, and then if you show me that I'm wrong, then you might have a problem.
It's also, this is my belief, I'd be interesting to see if it's one of yours, is that we get what we focus on.
Definitely.
So if we focus on what might go wrong,
it happens.
Guess what? It will probably go wrong.
And it is true, and you don't learn this, I don't think, you don't learn this till well into your 40s, but you are responsible for what you bring into your life. So if you want good, positive, happy things, you have to pull them into your life. Nobody's going to give them to you on a plate. Nothing is handed to us on a plate. But if you're miserable and your cup's always half full, or half empty, which way round is it?
I don't know.
They're always full in my new establishment. Cups are always full I am.
I can confirm that one, having had coffee from your establishment.
But you know, you absolutely, you are in charge, and that's what matters. So it's exactly right what you say. If you want good things in your life, pull them in. And don't blame everyone else just because they're not there.
But we do live in a blame culture, I think.
Oh, we do.
Particularly in the West. I think we're locked in this fear-driven blame culture.
Absolutely.
Where nobody wants to or is willing to take ownership or responsibility.
No.
And, you know, when I work with people in the corporate world and I say to them, you can do anything you want as long as you're prepared to accept the consequences.
Yes.
And I say, you know, what do you have to do? Well, I have to get up. No, you don't. Well, yeah, I do. What would happen if you didn't get out of bed? Well, I wouldn't go to work. What would happen if you didn't go to work? Well, I'd get the sack. Do you want that to happen? No, well, get up and go to work then, but don't complain to me about it.
Very true.
Because you can choose to pull the duvet over your head and stay there.
You absolutely can.
The only thing we have to do from the moment we're born is die. Everything else is a choice. And people don't get that.
They don't get that.
And then they think, oh my God, that's liberating. And then they think, and that's one hell of a responsibility as well.
It is.
Because I can't blame anybody anymore.
No, but that liberation, once that penny drops, then you think, And for some people, the fight is always against that barrier. So if you take the barrier away, and it's exactly, you don't have to, might be smarter if you did, or something, but if you take that barrier away, that opens the floodgate.
Do whatever you want.
Fabulous.
As long as you're prepared. You know, if you want more money, you could work harder, you could change your job, or you could rob a bank. You know, there's ups and downsides to all of those. If you're prepared to take the risk of spending 10 years in jail, if you're prepared to take that, then go and rob a bank. But be prepared for the potential consequences of that decision in your life.
Exactly.
If you don't want to go to jail, don't rob the bank. No. You know, but everything is a choice.
It is a choice. It is a choice. You know, I've made some brilliant choices. I've made some rubbish choices. But I actually can honestly say I don't regret any of them. Mm-hmm. Because that's all those choices are who I made me who I am today. And if I'd lived a very sort of sheltered, ticking along life, and there's nothing wrong with that if exactly what you say, you choose that for yourself, I wouldn't have had half the opportunities or half the experiences. And there's not one of them that I would have missed out on, really. Even the bad ones. Well, you know, they are character building. You know, that might sound a bit cliche, but they are.
And are they bad? They're only bad if we choose to think of them as bad.
They're only bad if you let them, if you let those experience, if you focus and harbour bitterness about it, and you have to let the bad stuff go. You just do. You know, nobody has a charmed life. Nobody. You know, so yeah, they're just an experience, and life is a series of chapters, and you just have to put the bad stuff in the chapter where they happened, and get on with the next one.
I was interviewing a few weeks ago. I was interviewing a Buddhist Lama woman.
Jealous.
Amazing, amazing. I mean, her energy was just incredible. You just kind of go in there. She has this incredible
calm
aura about her. And I asked her what are the key messages from Buddhism that you would like the world to get, and she said, let go of the past, live in the present, and don't invite the future. And I went, oh, okay, now letting go of the past, I absolutely get you that. With that one. Living the present, I try very hard to be fully present in whatever I'm doing. Sometimes I succeed better than others. Not inviting the future. I could feel my whole body reacting when you said that one, because we're so conditioned to that forward momentum.
I invite the future all the time.
Yeah. And she said, okay, what I mean by that is plan for the future, but don't get so tied up in making it happen that you forget to enjoy the present. I went, okay.
That I understand. Because I'd be worried if we were not allowed to invite the future.
Yeah. I think it is not having so much invested in the future that you don't see the opportunities. You know, some people can be so focused, I am going to do this regardless of anything, that they become tunnel visioned and they don't see the bigger opportunity, better opportunity in the periphery because they're blind to it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think what she meant was, she said, I planned for this building that we're sitting in now. I planned for that, but I didn't get so bogged down in trying to make it happen, to take so much control. I planned for it, I had the intention of it, and then I let go and I allowed it.
Fascinating.
Okay, I get it. And it's really interesting because we're so, I think, particularly in the West, conditioned to set goals, to have strong outcomes, to write things down, to know where we're going, to have a vision, to set action points, that whole thing about allowing can be really quite challenging.
Just as challenging as releasing that barrier we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Interesting. So I try and work on that, which I pick up you probably do as well, is I say yes to everything and figure out the details later.
Always. Details are just irritation.
Yeah.
But don't ever pass an opportunity by because you don't know how to do it.
No.
Grab it and figure out the detail afterwards.
Figure out the details
always.
Later.
Yeah. Every time.
Yeah, I had a feeling you'd be that kind of person.
You just have to. You just have to.
Which is confusing for a lot of people who can't. Can't cope, that's too strong, but struggle to get their head around how that works.
Yeah, but if you can overthink things as well.
Oh, gosh, yes.
You know, but I'm probably quite guilty of that. You know, I'm quite analytical in my thought processes. But, you know, if I see an opportunity, not necessarily financial, but something that might be a bit fun or a bit quirky or a bit different, or, you know, I do believe you can do anything.
just grab it and hold on to it. And then, and if you can't figure it out, somebody can help you.
Mm. There's always somebody there, isn't there?
Yeah. Always a way.
I've always thought, always had in my mind, a romanticism around living on a houseboat.
Oh, well, let me enlighten you.
Yeah, enlighten me about that one.
I have that too. I saw an advert in the Henley Standard one Friday for a houseboat for sale. Now, obviously, Henley's a very wealthy area, and the houseboat was on a private mooring between Wargrave and Henley Bridge. So there was only one, you know, and it had its own private garden, all fenced in, you know, next to very, very expensive houses. So I popped down there and I paid the guy £5,000 for the houseboat. And it was a Dutch fishing barge, very old, 1908. It was 44 foot long with a Viking sort of bowsprit.
Wow.
And actually, an 11 foot wide and with sort of beautiful sort of beams in it. Stunning. It was an old crate, but it was stunning. And I loved it. And a big stern you could sit out under a willow tree. And I lived there quite happily for a while. Can't remember exactly. 18 months or so with my dogs under the willow tree living the life.
Wow.
And, you know, the garden would flood and I couldn't get off. And the toilet and the shower in a garage in the garden. So
oh, really?
It was tough. And if you wanted to cook, you had to climb up on deck and turn the gas on. And the kitchen worktop was on top of a Perkins six-cylinder engine. So like I said, it's not for everybody. Perhaps a little bit nomadic. And then one day I came home and I was ironing, as you do, and my feet were wet. I thought, oh, it had a bilge pump and... I thought, oh, no, now my ankles are a bit wet. And it was there was a Halifax advert on at the time, you know, when a guy came in to the narrowband and said, oh, honey, I've got the mortgage. And they were up to their knees in water. As was I, Katie.
Oh, my goodness.
And actually, I was in my mid-20s. I remember I phoned my mother and she said, what on earth are you phoning me for? She said, have you tried 999? She said, I'm on the Isle of Wight. You appear to be sinking. Okay. Yeah, she did have a bit of a point. And I did. I phoned 999. And I'm not joking. They sent everybody. It was the most embarrassing night of my life. They were crying with laughter. It was so funny. I had two fire engines. The river police came up. And they were carrying all my possessions out onto the garden. And they cut open the stern. And they found a hole, you know, a really quite a large hole. That it was rotten. And they said, come in here, and took a kitchen knife. And they stuck it, and it went through every main beam.
Oh, my
was
gosh.
Rotten.
Oh, my gosh.
So we plugged the hole with a dog towel and a log, and they all went off home. And I was sitting in the garage with all my worldly possessions, thinking, this is going to suck a little bit then. And I thought, well, Thames Water came to see me to say that if it actually sank, I'd be liable for salvage. So
oh
we
my
were starting
gosh.
To get really not very funny.
Wow.
And I thought, I can't repair it. You can't move it, really. And actually, I did come up with a brilliant plan. And I managed to find the Dutch Barge Museum.
Mm.
And they're in Sittingbourne or somewhere like that. And I phoned them up. And I said, do you want to buy my barge for £1? Because I'd done my degree... Or no, I hadn't done my group degree by then, but I knew you had to have legal tender of some kind to make a contract stick. Money had to change. So they came up and they did. They bought it for £1. And I made them give me the £1. I still have it.
Wow.
And they tried to take it away. And they filled the hole with quick drying cement and they managed to get the engine working. I'd never taken it off the mooring. And they reversed off the mooring. And I, you shouldn't laugh, but I did laugh. They were stuck in reverse, going round and round in circles. And I sat on the riverbank, clutching my £1, thinking, this is my very lucky day. And I think it took them several weeks, but they did actually get it back eventually.
Gosh.
And for most people, that would have been enough, wouldn't it? But no, I thought, well, I like living here. So I went and I had a new boat welded. And I hadn't even really seen it. I just phoned through what I thought would be a good idea, along the lines of an Oxford College barge. And I went to see this crate that had been welded up, and it was in the Wargrave car park, boatyard. And it looked like a multi-storey car park.
It
was hideous. But it needed fitting out. So they towed that down to the mooring, had to chop some of the willow tree down to get it in, called the boat Wind Up the Willows, as you would, and fitted it out. Was very happy, a luxury. I didn't know I had a bathroom on board, all sorts of things. And then the council came and said, you can't live here.
Why?
Well, they said it wasn't a residential mooring. So that was very tricky, and they bought the cottage in Wargrave and had the boat. And I did a lot of research, and because it had been a residential mooring pre-1954, when all the rules changed, they had to concede that it actually was.
Oh, so you could stay there.
But yeah, but by this time I'd already moved on to dry land. And I'd rented out the boat to an actress, actually, who's still a very good friend of mine now.
Mm.
So yes, it is romantic on a very hot, sunny day.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not romantic any other time.
No.
So, not for the faint-hearted?
Really not for the faint-hearted.
No, but fun.
Great fun.
Great fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you have to row a small dinghy to get to the toilet, you know that, you know, in the 90s, you think, interesting. So, actually, life in the cottage, obviously, was much easier. Much easier.
So, yeah. So, apart from having a chain of cappuccini along the southeast from Hastings up to London.
Yes.
What else have you got planned?
Well, I'm actually researching and developing my own brand of coffee.
Oh, are you?
Yes, I am.
Ah.
Coffee's my thing. I've liked it since I was 3 years old. So,
gosh.
And that is the plan. So actually, I will roll that out as it comes along.
And where
along.
Are you going? Where are you doing your research? What, a particular country? Particular coffee
beans?
No,
here in UK, I've got a supplier, and I'm going to another big tasting of my own coffee 2 weeks' time. So,
what are you
going
to call it?
We'll just call it cappuccini, probably.
Cappuccini.
Yeah, you know, we're just working on the house blend.
Right.
I might have to think of other names if we expand, but if I can come up with one good one. Very hard to find the right blend that would please most people.
Is it?
Mm. No, it is, because everybody, you know, it's all a bit subjective. But I'm working on it. I've been working on it hard, and, you know.
Can you have your blend but have, a medium and a strong version? A mild
Could
and a strong
do.
Version or something, but still
Could
your
do.
Blend?
Could do. You can I could have whatever I like, but it's, you know, you have to have one blend for the majority, really.
Okay.
You know, until I am Starbucks.
Yeah. Oh, please don't become Starbucks.
I won't become Starbucks. No. But no. You know what I mean? Till you're big enough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You just... But I think, actually, no, that's good. So that's an interesting development that's coming along.
Yeah, how exciting. Because I remember when I was a kid, there was a place in Bromley called Coffee Importers.
Oh, nice.
And you could smell it from halfway down the high street.
Oh,
and it was all these coffee beans.
Delightful.
And you could go in and they used to grind the coffee beans.
Beautiful.
The aroma was...
I'd never leave.
And I always thought there is a gap in the market for something like that, where you can go
there
in
is.
And have, you know, your own blend.
There
I'll
and
have
there.
A bit of that and a bit of that and grind it up. And...
Yeah. I think there are some sort of specialty places that sort of, they will do it a little bit. There are a couple that will do it, but perhaps not on that scale. That smells lovely, isn't it?
Oh, there's nothing like the ground coffee smell.
Nothing.
And
nothing
bacon.
At all. Yeah.
Those two. Yeah, fantastic. It was really, really exciting. And I hope you win.
So do I. I will win, because I don't like losing. I make myself win. I have to win. It's, you know, and it isn't... It actually, that's an interesting point, perhaps. It's not actually all about money. We all need money. That's life, sadly. Mm. But it's not necessarily just about that. It's about, can I do this? Yes, I can.
Mm.
And I'm going to make that happen. So I will make that
You
coffee.
Will make it happen.
We'll make it happen.
You will. And when you're going back to your introduction, you absolutely have to try with courage and conviction.
You do.
Yeah, and believe that if you want anything, you have to try. Yeah.
And you know, in this sort of short time we've been talking, I hope, you know, that reflects through.
Oh,
that,
absolutely.
That truly is.
Loud and clear.
What I believe, who I am, really.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jo. It's incredible. 50 minutes has felt like five. We are at the end of 50 minutes. Can't quite believe it. It's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Are we finished?
We are. So you've been listening to Katie Day and Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women from around the world. Women are the new future. We are fearsome, awesome, fabulous, courageous. In fact, we just rock.